that of the Prophet.
That's right.
Now,
and whether following them is allowed in Islam or not, for example, following them in any religious cases.
There are some verses in this regard which praise the companions of the mm-hmm. Prophet. There okay. is no doubt about that. For example, the people who are present in Bay'at al-Ridwan are praised in the Noble Book of Quran. And some Sunni scholars believe that so it means that, they should be, all their actions should be praised. Of course, let me add the point that the Shia scholars do not permit the Shia to insult the companions of the Prophet.
Yes.
No, that's another story. We should yes. respect all the people who are respected by the Sunni scholar, by the Sunni brothers and sisters, especially the three caliphs. But doesn't mean that all their actions are correct, all their actions are good. No, there is no guarantee for that. So the verses talking about, for example, these people, first of all, it is talking about the people who are present in that special occasion, like Bay'at al-Ridwan, not beyond yes. that. So there are very limited number of the people. And second of all, the Quran is praising only that action of that people in that certain day and place. We have some narrations praising the companions of the Prophet. Again, first of all, the question is that who is the companion of the Prophet? You have so many different definitions. And second of all, there is a great possibility that Sahabi means a person who accompanied the other person in terms of faith, in terms of, acting upon duties and obligations. Physical presence with the Prophet in and of itself may not have any value. If you are accompanying the Prophet in terms of the deeds, actions, faith, righteous actions, and so on and so forth, only in that case you can be considered a companion of the Prophet. Now, regarding that narration, according to which the Holy Prophet is quoted as saying, all my companions are like stars, and whoever you follow, then you are guided. This is a narration quoted by Sunni sources. I'm not going to talk about the chain yes. of the narration. That is another story.
Okay.
But there are different questions here. First of all, based on the definition of the Ahlus Sunnah, we have like 100,000 people, companion. Does it mean that the Holy Prophet is telling us that all these great number of the people, 1,100 people, are at the same level? There is no difference whether you follow Imam Ali alayhi salam or that companion who saw the Prophet for a couple of hours and he did not serve the religion of Islam at all. It's not possible. This is one point. And second of all, these companions of the Prophet, they had so many differences, to the extent that sometimes they initiated war against each other.
That's right.
So this narration is telling me that each companion that you follow, you are guided. Now the question is that this is the battle of Jamal or Camel.
Yes.
On one side we have Talha, Zubair, and many other great companions of the Prophet. On the other side we have Imam Ali alayhi salam, and again many great companions of the Prophet. So is it logical to claim that the Holy Prophet says, whether you follow this group or that group, you are guided? It's not possible.
Right.
They are killing each other.
Okay.
So how come the Holy Prophet has, asked the Muslims that you may follow each and every one of them that you desire? It's not possible. It's a war. They are killing each other. Either I need to join the, camp of Talha and Zubair or the camp of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So this means that in practice, all these companions of the Prophet, they had so many differences when it comes to the issue of Khilafah. They had many differences. So after the demise of the Prophet, should I follow Imam Ali alayhi salam and
yes.
call him the first successor of the Prophet or the first caliph and
okay.
those people who followed him? This is a big difference here.
That's right.
Again, it's not possible for the Prophet to tell me whether you follow Imam Ali alayhi salam or Abu Bakr, you are guided. It's
okay.
not possible.
That's right.
So this is about this narration. When it comes to Adala of the Sahaba, there are some verses of the Quran and narrations to prove that we cannot prove the justice of all the companions of the Prophet, which I may share in the following session.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Hanbi, for a nice lecture. And thank you very much to the listeners for listening to this episode of Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Inna fil jannati nahran min إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن.
Superheroes and Beyond. Part 2. In a hot night in the summer in the late 1930s, a teenage boy who had recently lost his father in a street fight saw a superhuman character in his dream who had replaced his father. Strong, smart, fast, and protector of security. A superhero that the crisis-stricken American society anxiously waited for so he'd rescue them from the economic problems and injustice of the 1930s.
Fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
Not many people thought that the dream of a teenager would be so influential and leave such a huge impact on the future of a country. The Americans of the 1930s were challenged with social and economic problems, injustice, and crime. They needed a source of power who could put an end to their crises. A superhuman solution should have been found for the problems apparently no human being could solve. That was how Superman, the first superhero of comic stories, became the solution to the crisis. It was a DC company that released the red and blue clad man stories for the first time and started the narratives of a superhero. Superman fought against injustice in American society, corrupt officials and gangsters, and supported the oppressed and miserable people. Every day, American weapons would stoke tensions in the war in Europe, and the U.S. in return would reap a huge economic benefit from selling weapons to the country involved in the war. Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor in the United States served as an excuse to push the public to support Washington's engagement in the war. At that time, Captain America was quite helpful in setting the stage for the U.S. to get involved in the war. All American superheroes fought alongside the U.S. Army against the villain forces who had threatened America. In a period of 20 years after propagating American values, about 78 million children were born during the baby boom. That generation always felt the shadow of a nuclear war. The baby boom generation had become teens who started their activities to take part in society and express their demands. They needed new heroes to shout their demands out loud. As a generation grew up, the crime rates among the youth during the 60s rose. They lived during an economic boost and would never understand their father's concerns. It was like that generation and their parents were born in two different countries and were in two different worlds. They voted for Kennedy as a young and handsome president. They loved the Beatles and gradually started hippie bands.
That's why these children are practicing to...
Hulk, a character who turns into a green monster due to atomic radiation. As he was repelled by society, he turned into a popular hero for the baby boom generation who felt alienated from their own identities. Marvel's other nuclear hero and the most popular one during the period was Spider-Man. Peter Parker, an introvert, thin teenage boy who was from a baby boom generation, turned into a hero with amazing powers after he was bitten by a nuclear radiation-infected spider. Marvel introduced other heroes like Ant-Man, Thor, Iron Man, and X-Men with the same principles. Marvel's new heroes were nervous, complicated characters with a list of deficiencies whose human aspects were magnified and were distinguished from the flawless characters before. The baby boom generation changed society. Following social injustices, the Vietnam War, racism, and the assassination of their popular president Kennedy, the generation triggered a social revolution and questioned American values and causes. During those years, the Cold War reached its pinnacle. The Soviet influence in Vietnam increased, and the U.S. did not want to lag behind the rivalry. People in the U.S. took to the streets to protest the Vietnam War. But the most important superhero in the hero-making industry in the U.S., concurrent with the Vietnam War, was Iron Man, whose real name was Tony Stark. The Vietnam War, with its huge casualties and costs, was one of the shameful decisions in the eyes of Americans, and the opposition had snowballed. Society needed to be convinced. Someone had to sympathize with the people who had lost their sons and daughters. It was Iron Man who was tasked to do so. In the 1960s, he initially supported the U.S. Army's involvement in the Vietnam War, arguing that the U.S. will make a lot of money selling weapons. But gradually, he faced many changes. It was increasingly disillusioned with U.S. foreign policy. In the mid-1970s, he expressed remorse for the deaths of people who were killed by the weapons that he made and said he will take revenge for the people who lost their lives, especially for ignorant people like himself.
I saw young Americans killed by the very weapons I created to defend them and protect them. And I saw that I had become part of a system that is comfortable with zero accountability.
What happened over there?
I had my eyes open. I came to realize that I have more to offer this world than just making things to blow up. And that is why, effective immediately, I am shutting down the weapons manufacturer division.
The change in his character was a symbol of change in American society that had become aware of its own identity. The enemies of the superheroes were no longer the Germans, Japanese, communists, or any other foreign entity. The main enemy was inside the United States. During this period, the protests by people of color against racial discrimination spread. Leaders like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. turned into the symbols of resistance against the U.S. structure. The protests were at their highest after the assassination of Malcolm X in 1965. The incidents made Marvel create its first black character named the Black Panther. The scandal caused by President Richard Nixon, his resignation, and high inflation and unemployment rates made things worse.
In Washington, a break-in at the Watergate Hotel was found to involve five men in the pay of the committee to re-elect President Nixon. The burglar's target was the office of the chairman of the Democratic Party. The story was to make the names of two young local reporters from the Washington Post.
Catastrophe following Nixon's corruption case and the Watergate scandal gripped American rulers by the collar. They had realized that public opinion needed to calm down. And just like in the past, the superheroes were the best options. In one of the comic stories in this period, Captain America, with his fake copy, namely, the Captain America in the 1950s who fought for the U.S. Army, tells himself, "I've never fought with my own demonic part. A man with patriotic dreams, I'm responsible for the evil he did." Captain America was fighting with a sinister empire that wanted to take control of the U.S. In the end, he captured head of the White House, and by removing his mask, he realized the U.S. president was ahead of the evil group. The story is about disgraced Nixon administration. This time, unlike the previous times, the captain didn't become happy after achieving victory, and he abandons the fight. He loses faith in Americans and chooses to become a stateless man. He says, "I've done things that I don't take pride in anymore, but I always tried to serve my country well. Now I can see that the government is serving itself." The bitter taste of those days made Spider-Man stories bitter. Something rare happened in Spider-Man. Mary Jane Spider-Man's fiancée was killed in a fight. Spider-Man blamed himself for Mary Jane's death and never stopped reprimanding himself following the incident. It was similar to how Americans felt about their government. Marvel adopted this line and made social criticism in its stories. DC also tried to become aligned with social developments to some extent. So, it introduced a real hero against the power structure in America in its stories. He was the greatest and the eternal boxer, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali won the Olympic gold medal at the age of 20. He was always against the government because of the oppression against the black community. And because of his stance, he didn't join the army so he wouldn't be forced to fight for the U.S. Army in Vietnam. Muhammad Ali was a symbol of resistance against U.S. dominance, and he had become an international figure. And DC used the popular hero. In one of the stories, Superman, who's a symbol of America, was defeated by Muhammad Ali in a boxing bout. Later, they made up a team to save the planet from aliens. In the end, Muhammad Ali wins in a boxing competition against the aliens, and Earth was saved. The Pictorial story became the best-selling comic in the late 1970s. After Ronald Reagan took office in the 1980s, he made the government smaller but expanded the army. The conflict with the Soviets escalated, and American citizens' nationalistic support boosted thanks to professional media techniques. Reagan, who was formerly a movie star, knew very well how to act like a hero. Amid the Soviet threats and the Cold War, many people were scared of widespread crime. The Reagan administration was an avid proponent of individualism and consumerism, while the population was more scared of the violence. In Night of Darkness, there's a character of the president in the city of Gotham. It shows a cartoon of Reagan and his nationalistic speech.
Brave American forces are now engaged in direct combat with Soviet troops in Corto Maltese. Now those Soviets would like to see us turn our tails and run, but we've got to protect our interest, stand up for freedom. So don't you fret, we've got God on our side. Or the next best thing, anyway.
The city was about to collapse because of injustice. In the real world, on December 22, 1984, a citizen from New York named Bernard Goetz shot thieves with four bullets to defend himself. People sympathized with him, and the court that had already indicted Goetz acquitted him. He became the symbol of a person who has provided security and safety for himself in a chaotic world. He saved himself through his acts of violence. The situation provided comic books with sufficient ammo, and new characters stepped in. In response to the world of violence, three characters, namely Punisher, Daredevil, and Logan, torture their enemies through the most violent methods and would kill them after they lost a lot of blood.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the United States, Katie McEnany, a former White House press secretary, has been described as a liar and an opportunist by a former aide to Donald Trump. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Katie McEnany, Donald Trump's final White House press secretary, is a liar and an opportunist, according to testimony to the House January 6 committee by Alyssa Farah Griffin, formerly a communications director to Donald Trump. In testimony released on Thursday, 29th of December, Alyssa Farah Griffin was asked where McEnany fell after the 2020 election, either, hey, we lost, let's gracefully exit, versus, let's facilitate the big lie that Donald Trump's defeat by Joe Biden was caused by electoral fraud. I'm a Christian woman, Alyssa Farah Griffin said, so I will say this. Kylie McEnany is a liar and an opportunist. McEnany, who became a Fox News host after leaving the White House, did not immediately respond. Alyssa Farah Griffin now works for ABC. She also said McEnany was a smart woman and not an idiot. She knew we lost the election, but she made a calculation that she wanted to have a certain life post-Donald Trump that required staying in his good graces. And that was more important to her than telling the truth to the American public. McEnany has often addressed the issue of whether she lied while working for Donald Trump. When she first stood behind the White House podium in May of 2020, she promised to tell the truth to the American press. A reporter asked, "Will you pledge to never lie to us from that podium?" McEnany replied, "I will never lie to you. You have my word on that." She has repeated the claim, saying in June of 2021 she never lied as press secretary. McEnany also released a highly selective memoir, For Such a Time as This, My Faith Journey Through the White House and Beyond. The book repeats the claim she never lied to reporters, in part because her education at Oxford, Harvard and Georgetown meant she always relied on truthful, well-sourced, well-researched information. Kylie McEnany also spoke to the January 6 committee. In its report issued last week, it said, a segment of her testimony seemed evasive. In multiple instances, McEnany's testimony did not seem nearly as forthright as that of her press office staff, who testified about what Kylie McEnany had said. The committee also noted that though McEnany disputed suggestions that President Trump was resistant to condemning the violence and urging the crowd at the Capitol to act peacefully when they crafted his tweet at 2:38 p.m. on 6th of January 2021, one of her deputies, Sarah Matthews, told the Select Committee that McEnany informed her otherwise. Griffin, who left the White House in December of 2020, told the committee she did not confront McEnany while both worked for Donald Trump, adding that she got her Fox News gig. It worked out precisely how she'd always planned for it to, but she knew better. Griffin also described the chaotic workings of the Trump White House, which she called the flattest organization I've ever worked in, meaning the one with least distance between staff at the bottom and the top. She said Mark Meadows, Donald Trump's final chief of staff, meant to control access to the president, was a true believer to the end. Griffin told the committee, I would see press assistants in the president's personal dining room and not know how they got there, a press assistant being a very junior staffer. Accounts of senior staffers' attempts to control access to Donald Trump are legion. According to a book by Stephanie Grisham, Kylie McEnany's predecessor as press secretary and a longtime aide to the First Lady Melania Trump, one press aide in particular caught Donald Trump's attention. Stephanie Grisham wrote, I began to notice that he was taking an unusual interest in a young, highly attractive press wrangler on my team. What I do know is that he behaved inappropriately, and since the woman worked for me, I tried to protect her and keep his unusual interest in her under wraps. According to Stephanie Grisham, Donald Trump told one of her deputies to bring the woman up to the office cabin on Air Force One so he could look at her. Grisham said she came close to telling Melania Trump about such behavior, but was not alleging that anything happened between the president and the woman. It would have been pretty hard for him to pull that off, even if he wanted to, she said. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story. Former Trump White House communications director Alyssa Farah Griffin called former White House press secretary Kylie McEnany a liar and an opportunist in her interview with the House committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol. Alyssa Farah Griffin's scathing view of Kylie McEnany, her former colleague, was included in a batch of interview transcripts released by the House panel on Thursday, 29th of December. In the interview, Farah Griffin criticized Kylie McEnany for helping perpetuate the notion that the 2020 election was stolen. "I'm a Christian woman, so I will say this. Kylie McEnany is a liar and an opportunist," Farah Griffin said in her April interview with the committee. "She's a smart woman. She's a Harvard law graduate. She knew we lost the election, but she made a calculation that she wanted to have a certain life post-Donald Trump that required staying in his good graces." She said McEnany wasn't a true believer in the idea that former President Donald Trump actually won the 2020 presidential election. After leaving the Trump administration, McEnany secured a job as a contributor to Fox News Channel. Farah Griffin pointed to her new cable news spot in her interview with the panel, saying, "She got her Fox News gig. It worked out precisely how she's always planned for it to, but she knew better." Farah Griffin, who is now a co-host of ABC's The View, said, "She thinks most people around Donald Trump know that the former president lost the 2020 presidential election. The only people I think are true believers are like Dan Scavino, John McEntee, Mark Meadows, to some degree," she told the House panel. Farah Griffin resigned from the Trump administration in December of 2020, just weeks before the official end of Donald Trump's term in office. She told the website Politico in January of 2021 that she stepped down because "I saw where this was heading and I wasn't comfortable being a part of sharing this message to the public that the election results might go a different way."
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is Zainab, and today we're going to discuss something very important with Professor Naqavi. Professor Naqavi is a faculty member at Al-Mustafa University. Dear listeners, in this program, we try to answer your questions and issues that you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified progeny. Well, Professor Naqavi, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome. Well, since I'm from the Asian culture, so I would like to ask the question from the same culture, what happens when it comes to upbringing? What used to happen in the ignorant Arab times was that a girl child was burned alive. But then Prophet came, Islam came, and things changed. Prophet used to get up to respect his daughter and However, people practiced things for some time, but in some cultures, those ignorant things remained, like in the Asian culture. In our culture, whenever there's a girl child born and a boy, a girl is equal to dowry and a boy is equal to assets, and that's how it goes since they are born. There are no equal rights in the upbringing. What do you comment on that?
Yes, thank you very much. It's a very good question. Just as we talk about freedom, which is made, our teenagers especially are looking for freedom. Also, teenagers are looking for equality. They talk about equal rights, especially girls. Why don't we have the same rights as men, as boys? Why do we have to observe the hijab? Men don't have to observe a hijab or whatever. So many things that they may present these things as excuses for not acting according to the commands of Islam. Now, when we are faced as parents with these questions, we need to realize ourselves and make our children understand. The issue of equality is there when it comes to becoming godly and God-fearing. There's no distinction between a man and a woman. If one wants to traverse the path towards Allah Almighty and gain excellence and become godly and become and adopt the attributes of Allah Almighty in his practice, in his or her daily practices, or becoming making a personality which is close to God Almighty, there's no difference in men and women. Yeah. They have equal choice. They have equal opportunities to do service to God, to service to mankind, to carry out their responsibilities.
Yeah.
Women, girls, they can, if they remain at home and serve their family and serve their husband and take care of their husbands, they will be actually gaining proximity to Allah Almighty. So there are equal opportunities to go towards Allah Almighty. So our children must understand if there's a difference in men and women, girls and boys, it's something which is in the nature of mankind. If there was no two sexes or two genders, then how would the human race have
continued
and progressed? So it's something natural. So as far as equality is concerned, equal chances and opportunities to reach out to Allah there. But when it comes to responsibilities and when it comes to rights, they may not be equal, but they are based on equilibrium and adl and justice.
Yeah.
So we can talk about that.
Yes, we can discuss more after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Nakavi, and we're discussing about the equal rights, equal choices given to a boy and a girl in terms of upbringing. Professor Nakavi, as you were saying that there's no difference in the genders when it comes to about the proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Both can achieve, both can have, and we have seen in history, like Lady Maryam, Lady Fatima Zahra, salam alayha, and Lady Asiya. So we have seen that these great women have achieved that proximity. They even used to talk to angels. And so this shows us that God has given some super right, some very good right to women, which is lacking in our upbringing and in our societies.
Exactly. So nowadays, maybe many girls would be thinking, would be saying, oh, why shouldn't we go out to work? Why should we work, remain at in the house and take care of the house and household
chores?
Actually,
why should we be restricted?
Why should we be restricted? So that's an issue of free freedom also. That's an issue of equality also. As I said before, basically we have to carry our freedom and equality. Everything is for the sake of preserving and maintaining human dignity. Karamna bani adam. That is very important. We should realize that as parents, as children, we need to make us realize and make our children realize that everything is for the sake of preserving human dignity. Dignity which is embedded in godliness, which is embedded in God-fearing, being God-fearing and virtuous. And therefore, girls should understand, should realize, Islam does not forbid women from working, making an earning on their own. Even Bibi Fatima had her own property. She used to even, like Bibi Khadija. Bibi Khadija, salamullah alayha, she was a businesswoman.
Business tycoon.
Yes, so there's freedom of property, everything is there in Islam. But as far as the responsibilities are concerned, to the family, there are different responsibilities. The man is the bread earner. The woman, the lady, is the manager of the household. They have to work in harmony and unison. If the ladies are going out to work also, then the problem is who's going to manage the internal affairs of the house, who's going to manage the children, who's going to bring them up. So that's a grave issue. Of course, again, political responsibilities are there for women. It's not that ladies and girls should not go out to carry out their political responsibilities in establishing the Islamic Republic or the Islamic State or whatever is necessary in the political sphere. Just as Lady Fatima salamullah alayha went to defend the institution of Imamat and Imam Ali, not because he was her husband, because he was the imam
of the time.
Yes. So social responsibilities, welfare responsibilities for the welfare of the society, everything is there for women folk to carry out. But as far as relations between man and woman and children goes, the gravest of responsibilities on the shoulders of the lady.
Yeah. We'll discuss more on this important topic after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, "A righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise."
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Nakavi, and we're discussing about equal rights that should be taken care in terms of upbringing. Professor Nakavi, I was reading something last night about Lady Fatima Zahra sallallahu alayha when I came across the fact that she came out and she gave sermons, the historical sermons, in the mosque, and there was a difference between men and her, and there was some coverings, there was some shields. So, however, she carried out her social responsibility very, very, I must say, very wisely. And the line that was written after that was that Islam is not against expressing your defense, expressing your social responsibilities, carrying out your responsibilities. What it is against is your show off. So do you think when parents need to restrict their girl children, they need to restrict their girl child, should they restrict only in terms of showing off their body or also in terms of their responsibilities? Don't you think here the parents go wrong?
Yes, importantly, they should be allowing the girls to become aware of their responsibilities to society, to in their neighborhood, in their wherever they are going for studying or whatever. And as responsible citizens of society, they need to be trained. And who can do that the best? The mother can do that. Of course, the husband, the father, plays an important role, but because he's out most of the time trying to earn a living for the household. He is responsible for that. In the marriage contract, the responsibility falls upon the husband to take care of the family. So therefore, he is outside most of the time. So who is going to manage the household is the lady. That is a very grave responsibility. And if she carries it out properly and teaches her children to be aware socially, politically, carrying out the responsibilities, and especially the girls are taught to be good house managers, good wives, they will be gaining proximity to Allah Almighty quite easily. It's quite difficult for a man to become, in his responsibilities towards the family at least, it's a very difficult, hard...
Exactly. It's also in the, mentioned in the narrations that the jihad for man is outside, in the field, in the war, in the battlefield. However, the jihad for women is inside.
So much easier.
Yeah.
So much easier. Of course. Now, when there are responsibilities, there are rights. You can't have responsibilities without having the rights. If you do not have the authority to do something, you don't have the rights to do something, then how can you carry out your responsibilities? Wherever there's a responsibility falling upon you, there are certain rights that you have. There are certain, you have the authority to be able to implement your words and your commands. You have to be listened to, so you can carry out this. So if there's a difference between responsibilities and rights, between men and women, between girls and boys, it's because the more the responsibility, the more the rights you have.
All right.
To be able to exercise and carry out that responsibility. So we need to understand the framework Islam is providing. Number one, human dignity is the most important factor. Freedom is for that human demand.
Dignity.
And equality, or more correctly, justice, equilibrium, balancing things is another thing for the sake of human dignity.
All right. So, inshallah, may Allah give all parents this capability to carry out this upbringing equally, be it a boy, be it a girl. Because there's no differentiation, there's no racism in Islam. Thank you so much, Professor Nakavi, for your beautiful words. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you have any message for us, any questions, any feedback, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also listen to this program again by logging into our official website, which is www.parstoday.ir/en. There's a tab, COI, Call of Islam, wherein you can find our old programs. Well, you can also find us on these social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam. Thank you so much for listening. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.